I'm Jennifer Postenbaugh. We're here in the home of Werner and Barbara Bachelman in Slapout, Oklahoma. It is Thursday, November 8th, around 8:30 in the evening, and we're gathered here this evening with the Carnegies. And would you state into the microphone for us your names?
I'm Marvin Carnegie.
I'm Roberta Carnegie.
Roberta Carnegie. Great. And we're going to be talking this evening about the Dirty 30s in this part of the state. And so you've both said your names in the microphone, but could you tell us when you were born and where you were born?
Yeah. I was born in Iowa, the 8th month, the 3rd day of the 13th.
I was born in North Missouri in 1914, the 15th day of August.
Okay. And how did your family come to be in Oklahoma?
My folks separated when I was 6 years old, and my father came down to Oklahoma. He had an uncle here, a brother here that had homesteaded here. So he came here, and my mother took up with another man, and he didn't want us kids, and my father came back and got us kids and brought us out here, but he didn't have anywhere to put us or anything. He was just working by the day, and so he scattered us out, one here, one there, one somewhere else. That was in 1921 that I came here.
I see. And so how did you wind up in the Shattuck area? Is this where the uncle's homestead was?
Yeah, or? Okay. He's homestead in North of Shattuck.
Huh? North of Shattuck, okay. How about you, Mrs. Carnegie? How did your people come to be here?
Well, my grandpa and grandma Crail homesteads south of Arnett. And I don't remember the years, but anyway, my mother and dad brought me down here when I was 6 months old.
So you're a near native.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. What did your father do? Did he farmed and ranched, or?
Well, I think I would call it ranching more than farming.
Okay.
He came down here with his brother and the family. They all moved down here from Missouri.
And did he have experience in ranching before he came out here?
No, I don't think so.
Well, he worked in mines some, didn't he?
He worked in mines in Missouri and did, you know, he shucks corn and done anything that he could do, you know. And he kept a diary of his work, and every day he would work while he would write what he'd done and how much he made and how much he shucked. And
wow. Does your family still have that diary?
Yes.
Oh, what a wonderful treasure.
Yes, my son has it.
That's great. Now, you mentioned that your family had been split up, that your siblings were scattered around. How many were in your family?
There were five, and mother kept two, and us three came out here.
I see.
I was 7 years old when I came out.
And were you the oldest?
Ma'am?
Were you the oldest?
No, there was two older than me, my brother.
Okay, so you were the youngest of the three sons that came out here. And how about you? Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers younger than me, and then when my youngest brother was 12 years old, we had a sister.
Okay. What a wonderful surprise, huh?
My family was the same way. I had two boys, and when the youngest was 12, I had a little girl. And he graduated out of the high school 1 year, and she started school next year.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the reason she got so much gray hair.
I would say she's highly entitled. Well, tell me what a typical day was like for you when you were growing up. Did it start with doing chores, or what was life like?
The first field work I can remember doing was when I was 7 years old, and I was staying with some people north of Shattuck by the name of Petum, Roy Petum, and he took me to the field with three other horses on a one-bottom plow, and he took a walking plow with two horses, and he'd plow ahead with the walking team, and I would ride the one-bottom plow behind him and follow him the plow. That's my first experience of working in the field. From then on, it was about all work and no play. No.
Did you go to school?
I went to school a little. I can remember a couple of years that I only went a couple of months. I'd stay out, help with fall work, you know, and then go to school about the 1st of December, and then...
When things got too cold.
About the 1st of March.
You'd be back out in the field again.
Yeah, as soon as the ground thawed out, well, you'd start listening again.
Well, how did, compared to other, you know, people your age growing up, did you feel like you had it hard, or that was about what you expected? Or?
Oh, everybody worked hard then. I did miss having a family. I felt like nobody really cared, you know. And I think people pretty well kept me for what I could do.
So you worked hard then, huh?
That's about all I know is hard work, yeah.
How about you? What was your growing up life like?
Well, I didn't ever have to work. I just stayed home and helped with the housework and stuff like that, but I never did have to go out and work. My family was all together.
So did your day start like at sunrise, getting up and helping with chores around the home and then going to school, or?
No. I guess they kind of babied me. I guess I...
Well, good for you.
No, I didn't really have to work. I just, what I mean, I helped with chores and things like that, but I had it easy. I wasn't like him. He was hard.
So were you able to stay in school pretty much during the full school year?
Well, I went to the 10th year.
Through the 10th year. Were you able to do that all in one school, or did you go through a first grade through 8th grade, and then you went someplace else?
I went to Catesby, the little country school, to the 8th grade, and then I went to Laverne, and at that time we didn't run buses, and I had to board, you know, if we had a place to stay.
Wow.
And I went 2 years, and then I got married.
That must have been hard to be away from your family at such a young age.
Yeah, we took on Monday morning, and then I went back home on Friday evening.
And what was your transportation between where you lived and Laverne?
Well, my dad drove a truck.
Okay, so he would come up and get you, and then...
Yeah.
I see. And did any of your siblings go to the same school in Laverne, or were you just there by yourself?
No, I was just there.
You were just by yourself. Okay. Can you tell me, let's see, if you said you were born in 1913, so by the, what were you doing by the time things started to get bad out here with the dust storms and that kind of thing? You were married.
Yes, we lived out north of Shattuck on a farm. No, that was before that. Anyway, we had it hard, like everybody. We milk cows and raised chickens, and we mostly had our food. And we'd go to town on Saturday and take our 5-gallon cream and get sugar and whatever the necessities that we didn't raise, and buy enough gas to get back home and back to town. It was
hard.
It was hard.
Mm-hmm. When the dust storms came in, were there any things that you did to, like if you could see one coming, that you did to sort of prepare your home or your livestock or anything like that? Or,
well, with me, I had to wash on the board, and I had time getting my clothes dry. And one morning it was nice, and I thought, well, I'll get my washing done. And of course, I had a baby and was washing diapers, you know. And I hung a line full of diapers out. Everything was going all right. And pretty soon the wind came up and started blowing and broke the line, and the diapers went like this.
Oh, no.
I went and seen what had happened, and I started crying.
I bet. All that hard work down the drain.
But my husband was real nice. He helped me and took care of it for me. We had, wasn't pleasant, but I guess we lived through it. Of course, the baby had dust pneumonia, not real bad, but he had it.
That must have been a frightening situation as a mother, having to deal with that.
And when that big dust storm came in, the baby had a, it was my second boy, he could sit up on the floor, you know, he was able to do that, and he had 3-day measles. And my folks came down to see how he was getting along. It was on Sunday, and so my dad and I had his little sister, was born after I was married, and she was just about the same age as my oldest boy. And they was out playing, and my dad and my husband was out just visiting, you know, and walking around the place. We were in the house, my mother and I, and Dwayne was in the floor, and all at once it got dark. Just as pitch dark. And I didn't know where the kids was, the little kids, you know, and I ran to the door and started hollering, and my husband answered me, and I said, well, where is the kids? And they said, well, we've got them. They happened to be right by us, and we both reached and got them. Says we got them in our arms. It was a frightening thing until I found out where they were.
I bet.
And it was pitch dark.
Yeah, we've heard people tell us that you could stick your hand out there and you just couldn't see it.
Yeah. If those little kids hadn't have been close to them, they couldn't have got them.
Mm. Now, you were about the same age that she was when...
A
little younger. A very little bit younger. And so what were you doing at the time that things started to get bad around here?
Well, I was working on the ranch. I had been on a farm for most of my life, off different farms. I'd stayed in 10 different homes growing up. And I heard that this ranch needed a hand, so I had a borrowed pony, and I rode over there, and they said they'd take me on. So I was working there, and this happened on a Sunday evening, and I had a date. There's a neighbor boy going to come by and pick me up and take me to my date, and this dust storm blew in, and I thought that was going to spoil my date, but after about 2 or 3 hours, it kind of let up enough to where you could kind of get around and see, and got to go and get my date after.
You had your priorities. Yeah. Now, you mentioned that was a Sunday. Was that Black Sunday?
Black Sunday.
Black Sunday.
On Easter Sunday, yeah. Mm. The day before was the prettiest day you ever seen. Well, that day was the prettiest day. Mm-hmm. The nicest day we'd had in a long time. And then here come that, like, cloudy. And...
What a surprise, huh? I can't imagine. Let's see. Tell us about the kinds of things that you did during that time for fun. I mean, were there any fun things that you can remember doing in that period?
Well, I just never had any fun.
You just you had to wait till later on in life to have fun, huh?
Yeah, I was pretty busy all my life.
What about you, Mrs. Carnegie? Did you, were there things that you did for fun or things you did with your children? A dancer. So did you go to a lot of dances in the community?
Yes, my folks danced, and they took me when I was a baby, and I grew up on the dance floor. My dad taught me to how to dance.
Are there any dances in particular that did, was it like ballroom dancing or just swing dancing or?
It wasn't like it was now. It was just waltzes.
Just a two-step.
Waltzes, right, okay.
And square dancing. It wasn't like square dancing they have now, you know.
Right.
I really enjoyed it. You know, I was taught to go and dance and not be running out and travel around. My dad taught me that.
Well, were the dances in people's homes, or were they in...
A lot of them was. And we'd meet it on Saturday night, we'd meet at people's house, and they'd roll up the rug,
and you'd just start dancing, huh? And would it be people there with live music? I mean, somebody would just pick up a fiddle and...
There was live music. Hmm. And we had parties. We had the young folks had parties with each other. That was our entertainment. We didn't go to town because, you know, when we lived in Casby, if I went to Shattuck, I thought I was going to Oklahoma City.
That was the big city, huh?
Yeah, it was a big city.
That's funny. Did you have family members that ended up leaving Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl period?
Well, it was after the Dust Bowl, but it was with us in hard times. My folks, my mother and dad, went to California.
Oh, they did?
My brother and his wife was in California. They was all there but me. I stayed with them.
Because you were already married by mm-hmm. that point.
Yes, I was married.
So what part of California did they go to?
El Norte.
And did they end up staying out there permanently, or did they ever
yes,
come back?
They all passed away out there.
Oh, wow.
My sister, I have one sister left. She lives in California. And they had to go out there. They couldn't make it here. They took their whole family home.
Did you see them very often after that, or?
Well, I usually went out to see my folks once a year. Of course, I was working, you know, after I lost my husband. I lost my husband in 56. And he was just 48 years old. So I went to work. And I usually took my vacation after that to see my mother and dad.
I see. So where did you go to work at?
Well, I went to work first at the drugstore at Shattuck. We lived on a farm out in 9 miles north of Shattuck. And I went to work at the drugstore. And then I went to the bank. And I retired from the bank. And then I went just a little department store. I worked there for several years. But that's when I had my hard times, is after I lost my husband, you know, and we pretty hard.
Yeah. Let me just ask you while I was on this line of questions about your family. I know that they were scattered and did you lose touch with your brother and sister that were here in Oklahoma, or did...
Oh, we would. I might see them once or twice a year. They were pretty close, yeah.
Did they stay here in the state mm-hmm. during the Dust Bowl? So
yes, they were here.
They all did. Yeah. What did you think about the people that were leaving to go someplace else.
I thought I'd like to go with them.
So what kept you here at the time?
Well, I had a place to stay there on the ranch, and I had a bed and something to eat, and I thought I was pretty lucky. So.
Right. Better to stay with that than an unknown situation.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering what you did on your date.
I can't remember. Oh, if you had enough money, you'd go to the show. If you had a dollar, you could just have a heck of a time. You'd go show and buy something to drink and just have a big time. I had a good friend that he had a car, and he'd come pick me up. He had a Model A car, and I'd buy him some gas, 12 cents a gallon, get him a couple of gallons of gas, and we could go to the show, you know, and all that stuff. And if we needed some oil, while we didn't have money for that, we'd go to the filling station and ask for some used oil, and we'd put that
in. In 1935, you would have been 20, is that right?
Mm-hmm. I was 19 when I got married. No, I was 20 when I got married, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So going to the movies, going to the show would have been a good time out for you. That's something you would have done.
Yeah, that was a great time.
Were there lots of places to go to see a show?
We'd go to La Ferne. It's only about 10, 12 miles.
Yeah, we were through there tonight. Unintentionally. So who were your favorite stars to go see? Was there a particular person?
Way back then, I didn't go to the show a lot. A lot of times we just went picnicking, or we had a place called Battle Mound over there, a big kind of a mound, you know, and places like that. And drive around and do a little parking. And
some things just stay the same.
Yeah, kind of like you've done, probably.
Now, this isn't about me. So yeah. was it different for you if you were to go out on a date or with someone, or was it about the same?
About the same.
So despite your very different upbringings, you had the same kind of...
Yes, I think everybody, they didn't have anybody to go, and they had to make their own fun. Partied and get together and pull taffy and stuff like that.
Play cards and
things like that. That's what we did.
And people went to church pretty good then, too, because there was nowhere else to go.
Maybe out of boredom then, a feeling of necessity. Taffy pulls, you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else like that that you would...
Maybe make fudge or, you know, just something to entertain us.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite taffy flavor? Like, you know, I've seen pictures of people, you know, just stretching that thing out 20 feet or, you know, 10 feet. But what was the, how would you add flavor to it?
It was mostly vanilla, wasn't it? Wasn't it vanilla?
Yeah,
vanilla taffy.
Did you ever pull any taffy? I never fixed it up, but I've helped pull it.
It sure would get your hands clean.
So what games would you play at your gatherings? Would you cards and any other kind of... We've heard so far, 2 Deep.
Right.
Annie Over.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what that other game was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like drop the handkerchief
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Games that were more physically active, I think.
And then when we had our parties, we played party games. Skip the Blue and stuff like that.
You would sing and have certain songs to sing as you danced around and so on and changed partners.
Do you remember?
Kind of like a square dance.
Do you remember any of those songs?
No, I don't.
I don't.
You're just saying that because you're afraid that we'll make you sing one of them.
He don't mind singing.
That's Sorry, we'll get you to yodel for us at the end.
I might say that the last year I went to school, I didn't want to go to school because I was getting way up there, too old to go to school, you know. But the people I was staying with, they insisted on me going, and so the teacher, she wanted me to build a fire for her, and so I'd get up and milk 4 or 5 cows, don't remember for sure, but and separate the milk and do some feeding, and then I'd walk to school a mile and a half and then build her a fire before she got there so it'd be warm. And she gave me 25 cents a week. I remember that. And that's pretty good money. That's the most money I've ever had.
Not bad for fire building.
Huh?
Not bad for building a fire. So the schools would get really cold in the winter?
Oh, my. Yes, really cold.
And you might not have been there when they were getting really hot.
Even in your homes back then, they weren't very tight, you know, and you'd have water in a water bucket, and it'd be froze a lot of time in the mornings. And,
That's why quilts were so popular.
You'd have so many quilts you couldn't hardly turn over in bed, you know.
Oh, I just can't imagine.
And the houses wasn't insulated and warm like they are now.
What was your house like growing up? Did you share bedrooms with a lot of people? I can't remember how many, what you said about your children.
Well, we had the two boys, and we had a little old, kind of a long bedroom, and their bed was laying this way, and ours was laying this way. We all slept in the same bedroom. You know, now why every child has to have a bedroom of his own.
Well, at least that's what they think, huh?
Yeah, that's what they think. Mm-hmm. But we lived in one house that was just, well, you could hear the wind blowing through the cracks. And sometimes when it snowed real hard, it snowed through the cracks.
You'd be laying in bed getting snowed on?
Yeah. And my youngest son, we had one that we lived in one house that, when the wind come up, it whistled through the door. Oh, he was scared to death. He never did learn to cope with it. He would run and grab, come in our bed, you know, just because he was afraid.
I bet you had some odd living situations in all of your houses. You have some...
Yes. The last place on the ranch was the best place that I'd ever stayed at. I did have my own room there. But I've slept in barns, and one winter I slept in the barn till up after Christmas and finally got moved in the house.
Wow. It must have been cold.
Yeah, well, didn't think too much about it, you know, because that's just the way it was.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Christmas, how was Christmas for you guys in those times? And what would be a typical Christmas?
Well, when I was a little girl, when they'd ask me what I wanted for Christmas, I'd say a tablet and pencil. That's the kind of gifts, you know, they had because they couldn't afford anything else.
Paper and pencil?
Yeah. So, you know, probably the other kids asked for something else, but I always wanted a pencil and paper.
Did you like to draw or write? Or?
Well, I guess I like to write. And penmanship is why I was special.
So was Santa Claus nice to you?
Yeah, he was always pretty good. As far as, you know, that they could do, because my folks were poor folks. And,
yeah.
And one year after we was married and we had the two little boys, we didn't know whether we could get them anything for Christmas or not, and the neighbor man gave them both.
So would you have special, there be special food for the holidays, or something that you thought was really special to have to eat, or something that you only got once a year? Like my mother's chocolate peanut butter balls?
Oh, not really. just, you know, just... Just average.
Yeah. Did you have a Christmas tree?
No, I don't think we ever had a Christmas tree.
Were you jealous of people that did?
No. I was never jealous of anybody. I always thought if they could do what they could do, that's all right. But I can do just what I can do. That's all right. I never was jealous of anybody. I had neighbors that was jealous of the other neighbors, you know, and they tried to keep up with them, but it didn't make any difference to me.
Yeah.
That's, and it still doesn't.
Keeping up with the Joneses isn't a big deal for you.
No, never was.
I'm afraid to ask what Christmas was like for you living out in the barn.
Oh, I can remember getting a pullover sweater one time for Christmas. And maybe a pair of mittens or something like something you could use, you know.
Something practical.
I never don't remember ever getting a toy or anything.
What about other holidays? The 4th of July or what are they, Easter? Were they just typical, or did you not do anything at all for those? Or
usually we was in harvest, if you had any harvest, the 4th of July, when you headed with the header, barge, and team. And that was for combines and so on, you know.
Right. You'd have a...
Maybe you'd have make ice cream or something special like that. You know, have to go to town, get some ice. And
first time I asked people out here about 4th of July, I was kind of curious why they never mentioned fireworks, ever. And then one lady looked at me and said, "You've never put out a prairie fire, have you?"
Oh.
I was like, good enough, all right.
That's right.
But I guess
we didn't have money to spend on fireworks like, you know, anymore. Like, right. We used to spend lots of money.
What about, I know during the, in this area that a number of people out here were involved with WPA projects and that kind of thing. Was that ever something that you had a WPA job or knew people that did?
I got to work a shift or two on WPA. And I could get on the work if I would find a Fresno. That's a dirt-moving deal behind horses. Well, I found one, and I don't know how I had the money to buy it, but I bought it. I think I gave $10 for it, and had to go clear down the ceiling to get it. And I put in 2 weeks on the road, and rode down then to meet the paymaster to get my pay a few days later after I worked my shift. I rode about 12 miles horseback down there to get my check, and when I got down there, I found out my brother had said he was me, and he got my check.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I don't know. I think that was the only WPA work that I got. And I lost my check, I lost my horse feed, and I lost $10 on my Fresno.
And what did you say to your brother when you next met up with him?
I never did say
anything. You never said anything to him?
I think I would have said quite a bit.
I say you're a far better person than either of us.
Yeah.
I was always too easy. Everybody kind of took advantage of me, I guess.
What about you, Mrs. Carnegie? Did you know anyone that was working on a WPA project?
My husband did.
He did? What did he do?
I don't know what he did. You know. I know several of the men that was around was working on it. We was down close to it. We lived close to it, and they boarded their horses there. And I fed them. We fixed them lunch, you know. But I don't know what they done.
Was there any kind of attitude expressed about those projects at the time? Were people grateful for them, or did they kind of look down their nose at them? Or
I don't know. I think everybody's really grateful to have a job or get a little money. Just about the only thing there was around. A lot of boys went to this CCC camps, which was a good deal. And I wanted to go, but the ranch lady where I was staying, why, she said, oh, I'm afraid you'll, you know, get in such a bad environment to go into a place like that and so on. And of course, they really wanted me to stay there and help them.
Yeah.
So I just stayed there. Felt like I kind of owed them anyway.
Do you remember any government clothing being given out or food parcels being given out?
Oh, yes, there was. We didn't have to accept it, but there was food given out.
Did you not accept it because it was charity or not accept it because...
Well, we just didn't feel like that we was getting along without it. No, we didn't. I wasn't... Of course, we always lived on the farm, and we had our chickens and cows and had our milk and butter and stuff like that, you know, and eggs. And we didn't have to, but a lot of people, I guess. And I didn't feel hard to them because I felt like that they needed it. But we did not want to accept it if we could keep from it, you know, because...
Sure.
People had a lot of pride then. They had to be pretty... bad off to accept anything.
You've heard some people that have been really bad off that didn't take it, you know, because they...
Mm-hmm.
My wife, after I was married, she went to meet the commodity truck one time, and it embarrassed her to go. But she went, and she got a half a dozen grapefruit, and she said it wasn't worth the embarrassment to go meet the truck. But I knew a lot of people that would get flour, but even get eggs and get all kinds of stuff,
sugar
and cheese, you know, but that's all she got when she went.
Hmm.
Or a half a dozen grapefruit.
And she had to catch a ride to do that because we didn't have a car.
Oh, gosh.
What can you do with half a dozen grapefruit?
Have a pretty good breakfast.
Grapefruit casserole? Something like that.
But I got it. I finally got a job of driving a school bus to a country school. And it wasn't very much, but we'd save enough out of it to buy a calf once in a while, a heifer calf, and kind of started this little herd that way.
Was it your school bus job, you think, that gave you your final lift up that you needed and you could get started that way?
Well, really, one thing that helped me start... After I married, her folks moved to eastern Oklahoma, and we went with them, and I got a job working in the mines over at Pitcher, and I worked there through the winter, and I made big money over there. I made about $3 a day, and when I come back here, I had little money. But
that must have felt really good.
Going down in the ground, I didn't like that. Come spring, I got thinking about coming back out here and seeing about little white-faced calves, you know.
Uh-huh.
I came back.
Well, and this is what you knew, too.
Yeah.
So.
And by that time, well, things had begun to get better. It was starting to rain then a little.
You remember a time when it started to get bad? Like, was there something that indicated to you that things weren't as good as they used to be?
I was too young for much to register, I guess, but they'd had good years in the 20s, and I think I started working up there on the ranch the fall of 29, I believe, and that's about the time the depression really hit, you know.
Yeah.
And then started in the dirt storm, the drought. And we couldn't raise anything. If it just been the depression, we could kind of manage pretty well, but when you couldn't raise anything for your stock and then sell stock, and then they ended up with the government killing a lot of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a bad deal.
So did that happen at the ranch that you worked on, that they killed the cattle? Or
They killed some there. We didn't kill any of ours, but they brought cattle in there and killed them out. In fact, I have some pictures of the cow killing them.
Yeah. Those would be really interesting to see.
Yeah, I would think
so. It was sad. You see those cattle shot down, you know, and the government paid $10, $12 a head for them. But they didn't have nothing for them to eat much.
Yeah.
They were just starving to death anyhow?
Yeah, a lot of them were. Of course, we was on a creek to where they could fare a little better along the creek. Like, had some little willows called button willows. They would eat on them. They would eat sagebrush when they had to, and leaves, and kind of got by.
You want to ask him a question?
We heard the most amazing tale this afternoon. It was the first time that we've heard this, and all three of the people that were in this interview, or all four of them, confirmed that, yes, this was a common practice. They said that a lot of times the cattle would get into the Russian thistle, and that they would get, their stomachs would just get really bloated, and that they would have to put a knife in them to release the gas.
Mm-hmm. But you better stand back.
Yeah. Well, they just said it whistled.
they just said it would whistle as it came out.
But that was a common practice at that time.
Of course, we never blamed it on the Russian thistles. We blamed it on the Johnson grass.
Well, they also said that Johnson grass could have been the cause of it, too. But all of them knew exactly. Well, we said, well, where did you put the knife? And they were all trying to demonstrate.
Yeah,
exactly.
They all go right back in here. Back in the back triangle part of this, between the tailbone and the short ribs or something. Uh-huh. Yeah. But that sounded incredible.
But the experience I had with Russian thistles, they went through them too fast to
blow. Oh.
the opposite of that. Well, that sounded crazy.
Well,
did seeing the cows being shot like that change your mind about the government programs, or did it still...
I never thought anything about it. I know it was just hard to see them shot. But
we had several people tell us that was the only time that they ever remembered seeing their father cry.
Yeah.
Was when they would, you know, saw that, but it was just really terrible.
Were you a Democrat during this time, or?
I wasn't either one then.
So when things really crashed and crops weren't coming up and cows were being shot, you had your place at the ranch. They were keeping you on there at the ranch.
Yeah, I went to Eastern Oklahoma and stayed a year, and then I came back to the ranch. I was on the ranch until I moved to my own place where I live now.
But you didn't like working in the mines at all?
No.
What was your job in the mines?
Taking ore from the shoulders up to the shaft to be taken out. Used a mule and had little cars, and they set these barrels about the size of this table on these little flat cars, and the scoopers, they would shovel them full, and then you'd take the ore with this mule up to the shaft, and then they'd take it up and dump it.
Was that around Pitcher area? Mm-hmm. That tri-state mine area? Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty interesting. Even if you didn't like it. I mean, it sounds like it would be, you know, reading about it is interesting. I don't know if working in it would be.
Well, there was men down there working that had worked all their life there. 40, 45 years old, and they'd look like they was 75. It really took a toll on them, and they was be a coffin, you know, and they'd tell you, young man, don't stay in here. They had what they called... Some of them called it like a chicken having the roup, and some called it miner's con. I don't know what it was, but it was a bad cough and getting their lungs, you know.
So out you went.
Back to no man's land.
Yeah. Well, Steve had asked you if you know, was there like anything that really indicated times were getting bad? Was there anything that really indicated that things were improving? I know you said that when it started to rain out here that that was one thing, but was there anything else that...
Well, seemed like when it started raining, well, too, the government began to making loans, you know, to farmers, and the people began to being able to buy, to get a little money and buy land, you know, and it started raining to where they could raise some crops, and everything kind of started getting together, you know, again.
Did you notice a drastic change in the way that farming was carried out, the contour plowing and different things like that? Was that so people really took that to heart?
Yeah. They'd done contour farming, and then they had a deal that they called puddling, that they had a deal fixed, a long pipe, and have arms on it with kind of a paddle deal here and there, and pull that across the field, and that would make holes in the ground for to hold water when it rained instead of running off. And it all helped a little.
Yeah.
The government done a pretty good job of helping us to get things coming back.
What would you say, in your opinion, was the main cause of this disaster?
Well, off of the Dust Bowl, it was just because everything was plowed up almost here then. Anything that could be plowed was plowed and put into wheat. And of course, when it got so dry, why, nothing could grow, and it started blowing away, you know. So it's just the drought and the wind, and the drier it gets, the more the wind blows, and the more the wind blows, the drier it gets.
Right. Like it's been lately. Vicious cycle, that's right.
Is that what you would you agree with that opinion?
Well, I think so. You know, it might be that way now if we didn't have grass and stuff, the ground covered. But see, there, the ground was just slick and it just floated away.
We must have had a little moisture. It was blowing away, but we must have had a little moisture because I can remember the rancher buying 8 acres of land that joined him, and it was just all farmland. And I dug a half a mile of post holes one day, and that night it blowed him full of dirt. I had all to do over.
Oh my gosh.
That's just the way it blowed.
Yeah.
And up north there's a field there, and it had blowed off just like this table. And it came a little rain, maybe a half inch or inch, I don't know. But anyway, the boss said, "Oh, why don't you hook onto the drill and go up there and drill that to feed?" So I did. Didn't plow it or anything, just went up there. It was wet, and the drill would go in the ground. And drilled it to cane or some kind. And, you know, we got enough rain that made the blamedest crop. It was really good. And it just happened that way. No.
Well, is there any enduring memory that you have of this time? I mean, one thing that sticks in your head above all other things about the 1930s in Oklahoma?
Oh, no. Only thing I can just stuff around the ranch there. I know on a still day after these dirt storms or haven't been blowing, you could ride through the sagebrush and you could look back and there'd be dust like smoke, you know, foddering you and your horse would be 10 feet high, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just everything covered with dust.
How about for you?
Well, that thing that sticks in my mind, the morning when you get up, you show the print of your head when you laid in bed, and when you'd eat your meal, you got through, there was dust around
your plate.
Outside your plate. Mm-hmm. It just sifted in everywhere. It just, you know, it was silt. I think they called it silt.
Yeah, we've heard it described almost like a talcum powder.
Yeah.
Just so fine.
Yeah, I think it was.
There's a guy in Gaiman who's trying to recreate the dust, because he said he's never seen dirt so fine as it was during the dust storm. Mm-hmm. So he's building this machine.
Oh no!
Because he thinks that that it was the wind would pick up all this dirt, you know, that would be kind of heavy grained dirt, and then smash it all together and mix it up like a giant blender until it became finer and finer and finer, and then that's how it got in everywhere. So he's building this machine that'll blow this dirt around.
Kind of like have a to test this theory
to see if it'll make that same. Mm-hmm. Almost like baby powder.
Oh, yes.
Dirt.
Is this somebody at Panhandle that's doing that? Or?
No, it's the guy, Stansberry.
Oh, okay.
J.D., the guy that set up all the interviews.
Okay.
I helped us in Gaiman at the Pioneer Show.
Okay.
So he's trying to recreate it.
Oh, I tell you, it was just something. You just, if you wasn't in it, you can't really realize what it was like.
Yeah.
I think I'll just rely on your stories. I don't want to ever experience that.
I hope you don't.
Well, is there anything that you wanted to tell us about that from this time period that we didn't ask you about?
I had one more question.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you how you think you're changed today because of what you went through then. How did that make you a different person, or did it?
Well, I know I've been awful thankful for what I've gotten. I'm glad I went through what I did in a way, because you know how bad it can be, and you know how good it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a good experience in a way.
Made you appreciative.
I think it makes everybody that went through it appreciate now what we've got now more than somebody that hasn't gone through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't never want to go through it again.
I might, if you'd allow me to do it. I know Barbara has wrote a poem about the Dirty 30s, and I have too.
Oh,
and explained it about as good as anything.
I was hoping.
He's a very modest man. He has a book of the cowboy poetry, and I was privileged to edit the book for him and put it together right over here on this counter with a copier, and my granddaughter printed it for him. I don't know how many copies of that she put together over here, but I think you also have another book, don't you? You had two.
Well,
did you ever get that other one put together?
Yes, but he made so many mistakes.
Yeah,
I
remember that you were unhappy with it.
Barbara's the cause of this. She started me in on this. I was never thought about being a poet, and I lost a good cowboy friend to gathering cattle. And I wrote about him, and it was put in the paper, and then she got after me to do some poetry. And
that's an English teacher coming out, isn't it?
Just couldn't help yourself.
If it hadn't been for her and my wife, I'd never done any of this. But thanks to her, but I went a lot of places and done a lot of things. Oh, you ready?
Yeah, we've got it set up.
It's Easter Sunday. 67 years ago. It was in April of 1935. It was so terribly dry. Everyone so poor and broke. Dust so bad, you could almost choke. Wind and dust blowed almost every day. It was so dry, we couldn't even raise hay. Horses and cattle got so thin, it was awful the shape that they were in. Cattle only worth a dime a pound, hogs a nickel, if buyer could be found. Jackrabbits about took the land. They ate the bark off of the trees to make their stand. Jacks weren't too bad to eat, but they were tough. You needed good teeth. Then came Black Sunday, I remember so well. I thought it was the end of the world, and we were all going to hell. A black cloud rolled up in the northern sky. The birds left their nest and started to fly. The cattle lifted their heads and smelled the air. The horses stuck their ears up, and how their nostrils did flare. Something unusual about to take place. Chickens started huddling together near the chicken house place. The dust cloud rolled in about 5 miles high. Darkness covered all the land and the sky. It was as dark as any night. We had to light the old kerosene light. In an hour or so, the worst was over. Dust covered everything in the floor. The women got so tired of trying to keep house, dust came in every cranny, window, and door. Some got dust pneumonia and died. We all prayed for rain to save our hide. The government started to give in work called WPA. It wasn't much, but it sure made her day. The government started killing cattle at $12 a head. It was such a shame to see so many cows dead. In May, it started to rain. The ones that stayed started over again. Many people left to go to some other place. Some of us had to stay on this old windswept place. But we that stayed have reaped from the land. We made it with God's helping hand. 67 years ago, was that black day. So thank you, God, for helping us to stay. And that's just about the way it was.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
There are a few minutes more of tape. You want to yodel for us?
I don't know whether I can or not. I haven't tried today.
Do one of your songs and you're old. Do your songs or one of them with your yodeling.
Well, I stayed at a place when I was 12 years old and they had a old graphophone, we called it, a record player. There you wound up a hand, didn't have electricity then. You wound up a hand.
Did it have those round records?
Huh?
Did it have those round records?
No, they had these bigger records. Oh. But anyway, they had a record with Jimmy Rogers. He was the first yodeler I'd ever heard. And so I got trying to mock him, so this is really an old song.
Okay.
I learned this in about 1924 or 5. And I can't do it like he did. But I about wore it out. I've just sung it so much. It's waiting for a train. He yodeled, lady, 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 yodeled, lady, all around the water tank, waiting for a train, 1,000 miles away from home, sleeping in the rain. I walked up to the brakeman just to hand him a line of talk. Well, he says, if you've got money, I'll see that you don't walk. I haven't got a nickel, not a penny can I show. Get off, you railroad bum. And he slammed the boxcar door. He owed a lady, 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 owed a lady. He put me off in Texas, that old state I dearly love. The wide open spaces around me, the moon and stars above. Nobody seems to want me or to lend me a helping hand. I'm on my way from Frisco, going back to Dixieland. Well, my pocketbook is empty and my heart's filled with pain. I'm 1,000 miles away from home, just waiting for a train. He yodel-lady, lady, 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 yodel-lady. Well, it's raining and it's hailing, but I must carry on. I'm a-thinking about the good old days when just a boy back home.